Welcome to the Randy Selzer Real Estate Podcast, where we discuss important topics for buyers, sellers, and investors in the Toronto area real estate market. Here's your host, Randy Selzer.
Hello, everybody. It's Randy Selzer here. Welcome back to my YouTube channel. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. Giovanni Barca is joining us today. He is a mortgage specialist here in Mississauga in the west end of the GTA. He's an expert in mortgages, and welcome, Gio. So nice to have you on board.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
No worries, man. So we're just going to chat today. There's so much going on in the real estate market, especially on the financial side of it, with mortgages, changes to the rules, and I'm sure we're going to have a ton of stuff to talk about. But before we begin, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Are you originally from Toronto?
So born in Hamilton. I lived lived in Italy from 5 to 16, came back all on my own. I went back to my Hamilton roots, put myself through school, and I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And so I went to school, studied law. Within 2 weeks of coming out of school, I was in risk management. I was one of those pest debt collectors. And that's how I learned the real way of the world and finances, straight out of college. And I've been in risk management for many, many years. I've held senior management roles with the big banks. And now I decided for the last 4 years now to move to the nice side. I'm on the sales side now. So now I'm happy to provide clients with funding to achieve their dreams versus being the guy calling saying, sorry, your dreams are no longer viable.
Well, there's two sides to it. That's for sure. I didn't know you were from Hamilton. I didn't know that. And my sister used to live in Hamilton. She did for a few years. She was on Upper James Street, right up on the mountain as you go up the hill there. And she lived there for a few years. She's since moved back to Toronto, but she liked it there. So it's different. But I'll tell you, Hamilton has really come up in the world in the last few years. I mean, it was pretty depressed for a while there. But now, are you kidding me? It's like, it's booming, I'm pretty sure.
Lots of opportunities in Hamilton, that's for sure. You know, we saw that big migration from Toronto all the way down to Windsor, London. So they skipped Hamilton, but as we get back to normal, I don't know that people are going to go right back into Toronto, or even if they can, but Hamilton seems to be right in that middle sweet spot where, you know, people could definitely come back closer to, and we might be in for a Hamilton boom there.
Hamilton has some nice areas too. People see the steel mills and, you know, in the harbor there, and it gets typecast, but there's some beautiful areas. And I like Ancaster too. Ancaster's a beautiful place. So
Absolutely.
Anyways, we're both in the real estate industry. We're both, you are on the financial side. I'm more on the sales side for houses and condos. And just to give our listeners today a little bit of background in case they, maybe they're not from Canada, or maybe they're not familiar with what's happening in the market here. But we, Canada's, especially in the greater Toronto area, the real estate market has been on a tear for many years. For 10 or 15 years, we've just been setting new records and prices have gone through the roof. It's just been bananas, including through the early part of the pandemic. A lot of that came from ultra low interest rates, which we had for many years, where people were getting, if you're an American listening here today, we had a lot of 2% mortgages or even under 2% mortgages for years. And of course, from many people's perspective, that's like free money. So people were bidding up the price of houses, like there, you know, there's bidding wars. People would pay $100,000, $200,000 over the asking price, just crazy stuff. And all that came to a crashing halt in early 2022, when the Bank of Canada discovered that, oh my goodness, there's inflation in the world and they should start raising rates. So they did. And the Bank of Canada, which is like the American, the US Fed, very similar, Central Bank of Canada, raised rates, I believe, 10 times in about a year, which just shocked the heck out of everybody. And people's ability to finance a purchase became much more difficult over the past couple of years. So the market has slowed down. The numbers have dropped in terms of the number of sales has dropped significantly. The real estate market has cooled off absolutely. although, and prices came down in some areas, but not as radically as you'd think. There's parts of Toronto, I think, where the prices are solid. Like if you go into some of the upper neighborhoods like Forest Hill, places like that, they may actually be up a bit. And there's other areas, parts of Brampton are way down, 20% down. Parts of the East End are way down, 20% down. So we're in a kind of a mixed bag right now. Got to turn off my phone, man. I forgot to do this. This is the Randy Seltzer podcast. This, you're going to get used to this. So it's buzzing away, but I'm just going to shut off the alarm thing. That's me and technology, man. It's just unreal. So that's where we're at. We've got a slowing market. This year in 2024, a lot of people were expecting interest rates to come down. And so far they have not. So here we are, we're halfway through April 2024, and the rates are still up pretty high. Mortgage rates have gone up from fixed mortgages have gone up from that 2% mark or under 2% up to about 5.5%. There's discounted rates, but you're still paying a pretty big premium. And here in Canada, again, any Americans listening to this, in the United States, people lock into a mortgage for 30 years with a fixed rate. Here in Canada, we have a 30-year amortization or a 25-year amortization, but you have to renew your rates at a specific time. Usually 5 years, lately it's been a little less than that. So the potential is there for people renewing a mortgage. Their original mortgage may have been at 2%. Now they have to renew it at 5%. And that's a big shock to many existing mortgage holders, many existing homeowners. So that's sort of where we're at. Prices are still pretty good. I mean, again, even with condos, and there's issues with supply. I still think we have a housing shortage here in Canada. We've had tremendous population growth over the last 12 months. A lot of people, over 1 million people came to Canada last year. And we do have a housing shortage. So that's part of it, but not all of it. People are holding on to their properties. A lot of people that I know just decided not to sell because they couldn't get the price that they wanted. So they're going to stay put for now. I guess right. I understand that. But that's where we're at. And today, a lot of people in the financial side of things, the banks or mortgage brokers, are getting very creative in helping people to finance that purchase. We still have a thing called the stress test here in Canada, where people have to qualify at a rate that's 2 full percentage points over the actual rate that they're going to get. And that's still in effect. So if you're getting a fixed rate mortgage at 5.5%, you have to qualify at 7.5%. And that's created some issues as well. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Gio. You're the expert on this for sure. I tend to ramble on a lot, but I'll cut out here and I'll hand it over to you. What should we talk about? Oh, and another thing that I want to make sure we discuss today is the investment side of things, because in the Greater Toronto Area, in the GTA, there's been so many people that have invested in a second property or a third property or multiple properties, whether it's condos or other houses, and then they keep them and they rent them out. And that's been a very lucrative technique over the last 15, 20 years. And I know a lot of people are asking me, I get this question all the time, that now that the rates are higher, how do you get into investment? You want to start with that? Let's say you've got a home already and maybe you've got a mortgage, maybe it's paid off, but you want to get, you're considering because rents are high in the GTA as well. And what would you tell people to do if they're thinking about making an investment, you know, buying, let's say a condo in Toronto or in Mississauga or in Hamilton, wherever, and they're thinking about doing that. What advice would you give a potential investor today?
So let me tell you what I'm seeing coming across my desk on the investor side. The smart investor today, they're not looking strictly where they live. So they're diversifying their portfolio by looking Northern Ontario, Southern Ontario, even outside of province. Alberta is a really hot spot right now. You have really low prices. Yep. And the taxes, the property tax are not that high, and the rents are really, really good. So you could secure yourself a nice rental property, have a property managed out there, and you are going to be cash flow positive without any concerns. The Alberta market is definitely going to improve. So you're gonna sit back and you're gonna wait for that property to increase in value, and then will, all while cash flowing positive. The other thing that I'm noticing is investors are diversifying their position. And what I mean is that instead of buying a single dwelling home where they have all their eggs in one basket with all the challenges out there with rents not being paid, what they're really doing is they're going more towards a multi-door unit, triplex, fourplex, even a duplex, to minimize the risk of, okay, well, one tenant might default. I have the support of the other three so that I can still stay afloat. And that's a very important key point to keep in mind. Very safe to jump in as a first-time investor by going into a multi-door complex. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of these are seasoned investors that I'm seeing, and they're purchasing their third, their fourth, even their fifth property. So they're building up right now, and the reason why they're building up is contrary to what most people are saying. The interest rates are high, so I'm going to stay out until they come down. The investor is saying, okay, the price is the lowest it's ever going to be because the interest is so high. And the minute the interest rate starts coming down, it's going to inflate valuation for properties, which means it's going to cost more to try to jump in and become an investor. There's a lot of programs that are available for people to jump into and become a first-time property investor, where forecasted income is taken into consideration for you to qualify for that next property. And what that means is, let's say you have a household of $200,000 of income, and based on your current liabilities and holdings, you may not qualify for that next purchase. But if you find a property that will gross an additional $30,000-$40,000 a year, depending on the type of property that you're looking at, my program allows you to use 80% of that gross forecasted income outside of GTA and VGA, 90% if it's within GTA or VGA, and we add that on to your personal income in order to qualify for that next property. So that makes it a lot easier for you to be able to jump in that first property.
So
So
80% of forecasted rent. You look at market rent, this is what you're going to be getting, and you can claim 80% of that as income before you actually own it with income coming to you. But you,
that's
okay.
correct.
Okay, that's good. That's
That's
really
correct.
good.
Yes, and we have some great offset calculations that really facilitate clients to jump into the second and third, where we technically eliminate the liabilities associated with those rental properties, and we use the net income from each one of those properties, and we add it back onto the personal income of the clients. So now you have all this additional, whether it is, it could be $300 a month, it could be five, as long as you're the smart investor, because we have to differentiate here. People that jumped in during COVID, the let's buy everything. Doesn't matter if it's with a private mortgage, it doesn't matter if it's a B lender, it doesn't matter if I'm paying interest only. Let's jump in, let's become investors, just so that we can ride this wave of the property valuation going up. Well, it didn't really work out for those who did this during COVID, because valuations were up, they're paying high interest, and now the market is adjusting. And I'm seeing quite a few of these properties where they really have been paying interest only just to get into the market. It's a really, really tough position. So being, the smart investor that is not going to jump into those kinds of mortgage vehicles, they will, go with a conventional bank rate. They'll have a substantial down payment. They'll have a realtor who actually understands the market they're in and provide them with guidance on whether that property is going to be a really good rental property within the 3, 5, 10 year mark, or is it going to be something that it's a quick project? Let's buy it, let's do some work, let's rent it, sell it in 3 years for a profit. So that is we need to make that put that line in the sand there, because it makes a big difference. The program really works well, because once I remove all those liabilities and just show income plus forecasted income, it just makes it that much easier for you to qualify for that third and fourth rental property.
For the benefit of our listeners, I'm pretty sure the answer to this, but just to confirm that when you're buying an investment property, you do require 20% down. You must have 20% down to buy an investment, just so everybody understands. It's not like in Canada here, when you buy, you buy your principal residence, you can buy technically, in theory, with as little as 5% down.
Yes. If it's declared as an investment property for the purpose of rental, 20% is a requirement.
And also, for the off topic a little bit, for anyone listening, in Canada, again, if the purchase price is $1 million or over, even if it's your principal residence, you do require 20% down as well.
That's correct.
So everybody's on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the default insured segment of the market, where clients do not have the minimum 20% down payment.
Right.
The cap on purchase is $999,999. It cannot reach that $1 million mark. And it's a great vehicle if you have great income and you just haven't been able to save up enough of a down payment and you want to get into the market.
Right.
It comes at cost, depending on the amount of down payment. You're looking at $14,000 to $29,000 worth of default insurance premiums.
Right.
The banks love those products because
they're
insured against anything going bad. We've seen a bit of a discrepancy during COVID, where the valuations, you can buy anything under $1 million that was your dream home, right? I think we saw really a decline in default insured mortgages, because really you couldn't buy it.
That's true.
So it's been a little bit of a tough go. I know CMHC has run some programs to try to help clients jump in with the shared ownership, but that program now is gone. They're talking about bringing the 30-year amortization to help with affordability. That will definitely help. I'm not sure if the insurance premiums will change, go up because the amortization is being stretched. I don't know. There's questions, but it could definitely help somebody who's right there on the cuff of, 25-year amortization, I can't afford it, but 30 years, I can jump in. So again, they're just widening up that bracket of somebody who can actually use the program.
Okay. So someone comes into you and they live here in Southern Ontario, but they've been doing a lot of research, and they come into you and they say, I want to buy a condo, an investment condo in Calgary. Okay. I've looked at it. It's online. I can check. Everything's online these days. I like the prices. I like the rents that we're able to get. What is the next step for that person, if in terms of their financial stuff, to get it, all their ducks in a row? How do you go about that? And I must confess, I don't know anything about Southern Alberta prices, whether to purchase or the kind of rents that they. I honestly have no idea, but I know it's about half a year, give or take, in terms of purchase price. And I don't know what the rents are. So what would you counsel them to do first?
Well, I would counsel them to, first of all, do their homework, talk to a realtor who is very well versed in the investment field.
Right.
Because there's more than just let's look at an MLS. The price is great. Market rents are great right now. To me, that is very transactional. That is, today. But an investor needs to be counseled on the long-term impact of purchasing that property. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of economic issues out there that will impact how a property will go up in value or go down in value. And we've seen that in Toronto, the busy downtown core. You can buy a condo without overbidding by a lot. And now there's lots of condos out there that they won't sell. Yeah. Right. So the relationship with that comparison is that if you have a realtor who can understand what's happening in the economics, for example, listen, everybody's leaving Toronto.
And okay, during COVID, leaving Vancouver, right? Too. Lots of them. Right.
Exactly. So everybody's leaving. What's going to happen to the condo market, for example? It may lose value because everybody's selling, right? So there's economic factors that a realtor needs to be able to counsel. You might be here in Ontario with that client. You counsel them. You make the connection to somebody who is in Calgary, for example, that you trust and is going to provide the same type of support so that they actually get into a property that is viable for the future. There is the course that you might be familiar with, the Real Estate Investment Certification course. That is really, it should be a tool in every realtor's pocket today because it does help you understand and analyze the market to help clients become an investor. Every realtor who during COVID said, let's buy a condo in Toronto because it's hot and the rents are great, right? Every realtor who did that over COVID, right now, they're not getting callbacks from those clients saying, thank you for putting me there.
Right.
They're not getting that.
Put everybody in a variable rate mortgage too, which did make sense at the time, but that's another issue. Yeah.
Yes, of course. I was a big proponent of pushing variable rates because historically, when I was looking at 10 years worth of historic data, even if the rates would go up at that time, it would still not be as high.
You're still a winner. You're still a winner with the variable at that time.
Exactly. It would still be lower than the current fixed rates. So it didn't make sense for me to say, here, lock in at 3.5% versus 2% with the variable. It really did not make sense. I probably would have changed my tune if the rates would have increased slower. But because they increased so quickly, everybody got caught and it was straight. Wow. Stop taking the variables, start going with the fixed. Man. There was one between.
I have some personal experience with that, sir. But the good news is I think it's a fair prediction. First of all, nobody has a crystal ball, whether you're a banker or a realtor. No, I wish I did, but nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody knows where prices are going to be 2 years from now or where rates are going to be 2 years from now. But I think it's a fair bet. I think it's safe to say, I don't think rates are going to be higher 2 years from now. They might be the same, but the chances are pretty good, I think, that they're going to slowly come down. I do believe that. Again, with a caveat here, we're not giving investment advice based on, stuff that we know for sure. This is just a hunch, a guess from within the industry.
It is. Exactly. I mean, in my previous life, I was managing the litigation team for one of the big banks, and we saw people losing. And this is this exact situation in the Vancouver area where you had really high selling prices, a lot of overbidding from international buyers, which artificially inflated the market. So Canadians competing with that market and who actually got into that market, when things stabilized, they found themselves in a negative equity position. And we're starting to see that right now in Ontario, which is, it's not a good sign. Ontario is the biggest market in Canada. So finding yourself in a negative equity position after 5 years, not a good thing.
Well, I have some of my own clients that are in a little bit of hot water because they took out big lines of credit on their property. They refinanced, they took money out to buy other things. Not necessarily good investments, but just, you know, to buy a new car or a boat or go on a trip that maybe was not the wisest thing to do. But yeah, that does exist right now. Keeps coming back to me, and I do believe this is true. Something you said a little earlier, the quote that I always think of, I forget who said it, but they said the best time to make an investment is when there's blood in the streets. Forget, that was like Warren Buffett or somebody like that. I can't remember exactly who. Now, I don't know if there's blood in the streets right now, but the time not to buy, the time not to buy is like 2.5 years ago, where every house that came, or every condo that came on the market, there's a bidding war and people are paying $100,000 over asking without even thinking about it. That's not the time to buy. The time to buy, maybe now, and what you said at the beginning was that I think if you're a smart investor and you got to have, you know, you got to have some backbone here. The time to buy could be before the rates start to come down, because I believe that the minute they start to come down, even if it's just a quarter point, you're going to see this market pop. I do believe this in Southern Ontario. There's so much cash on the sidelines. People are just looking for a little sign. And it could be that if we get a rate reduction in June or in September or wherever, whenever, that might be too late. You're going to see things get crazy again. It could happen. But again, we don't have a crystal ball.
No, we don't.
So, okay, going back to the investor, and they want to buy a condo in Alberta, which makes sense. They look at the numbers, and I believe you can buy a condo in Calgary for about half of what we pay here. So let's say $300, $350, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the rents are pretty good, and you got, like you say, the positive cash flow. So we hook them up with a trusted realtor in Calgary, somebody, and the realtor's network, just as bankers do, but you could do their financing from here in Ontario, or how does that work? Could be
I can, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So I'm able to do a mortgage anywhere in Canada.
Okay.
Right from home.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. We're probably using Zoom meetings like what we're doing today occasionally.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. The biggest.
That's only if they want to see me. Most of the time they just want the money, right? So they don't care to see me.
The world we live in, man. But the biggest objection that I hear from people about in buying an investment property far away is the property management aspect of it. How do we keep an eye on a condo in Southwest Calgary that's like, what, I don't know, 2,000 miles away? How do we keep an eye on that to make sure that the tenant, I mean, as long as they're paying the rent, that's good. We get a property manager, and there's some costs associated with that, which you factor in, which are tax deductible.
Yes.
But how do we keep an eye on it to make sure that they're not having wild parties every night? And, you know, how do we get a handle on it? How does that work? What do you say to someone? Because that I hear that all the time. We do it, but it's too far away. We can't keep an eye on our investment.
Well, you know, one of the roles of the property manager is to manage the property. And while there is a cost associated there, this is what they do for a living. So that's their profession. They are responsible. They do take care of the property. They keep an eye on it. When you're looking at properties that you're well into the cash flow area of the investment, spending an extra $200-$300 a month to make sure that your property is safe, it's being used as required, it's not a big investment. We spend that kind of money on Starbucks. Imagine spending $300 to keep your investment safe. It's not a lot of money.
So, well, that's great. And I know that trend is going on, not just for Alberta, but a lot of people, again, when you crunch the numbers, they may not make sense in downtown Toronto right now, or they may not make sense in square one. They might not for an investor, but there's a lot of people buying properties in places like Windsor, North Bay, you know, places that are out a little further. And I'm not even including the Guelph and Kitcheners of the world because their prices are pretty similar now. Or even Hamilton has really caught up a lot. But people are going further afield. I talked to a guy a couple of months ago that was going to buy a property in Windsor because they did the number, they crunched the numbers, and it made sense, made a lot of sense. So, where am I going with this? Are there any particular areas that you would recommend, or would you leave that up to the client to decide?
I would actually leave that up to the realtor,
Okay.
because the today's realtor needs to know more than just their market, especially if you're working with investors.
I
If
agree.
you're a Hamilton realtor and all you want to do is Hamilton, you are limited, because not everybody in Hamilton can afford to buy an investment property in Hamilton. You need to be versed with the markets and the economics in other areas of the country. And you need to show a good business case as to why they should be going, let's say, to London, Windsor. Why is it better to go out there if you have an investor client? They need to be able to really sell that business case and show that client, here's where we're buying. Then it needs to be a clear-cut proposal where the client who wants to invest, they want to become an investor, it's a simple yes or no. The paperwork needs to be black and white, and the proposal needs to be clear. Here's the numbers. Here's your financing. Let's put it all together. Here's your market rent. Here's what we're looking at for you to cash flow. Here's your risk mitigating factor to make sure that if anything happens, you are going to be okay for 6 to 12 months. It all needs to be built. So it really falls on the realtor.
There you go. Just another hat we get to wear. What can I say? But it
I
is
you know.
fascinating. I was just kind of kidding there, but it is fascinating when you start looking at other cities and even other provinces. Man, I can tell you, Alberta for sure is very much more landlord friendly than Ontario. We have, if you've ever had issues with clients with tenants, in Ontario, it can become a real problem with the tribunal and the delays. They're way backed up. And they're doing all their stuff with Zoom meetings now too. It's not in person anymore, apparently. They got like 50,000 cases on backlog of issues with, I kid you not, for the Ontario Tribunal, Landlord Tenant Tribunal. So in Alberta, I believe it's much more cut and dry. You don't pay the rent, you're in default, you got to go. You know, it's that simple. Other than that, everything's perfect.
I think about the role as a realtor quite a bit, because if I compare to what I've seen the realtor become during COVID, versus what that job used to be, I think there's a huge need of the old school realtor to come back, because there's way more value there, versus the easy transaction. COVID has taught some of the realtors that you don't even have to do an open house anymore. You put up a sign, and by the time you hammered the sign in, you have three offers. That is not normal.
Geo, I love what you just said. It's music to my ears, and I agree with you 100%. I'm old school. I've been in the business 30 years. And yes, technology's great. COVID did change everything. There's no doubt about it. But there are some benefits from the old way of doing things. This is going to sound weird to some people. I miss going to do an offer in someone's house and sitting across the dining room table from them. Especially if you're working with a buyer and you're meeting the sellers in person, you could pick up so much information just from sitting there and watching their body language. You could figure out their motivation instantly just by watching the husband and wife, let's say. You could tell if they were really interested in selling this house or not. And nowadays we've become as just a commodity. When you're emailing in an offer for an e-signature, it's more efficient. But I do think something's missing. I really do. I really do. And like you said, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you do an open house and boom, like you say, you put an offer date Monday, you're going to have 10 or 12 offers automatically. They're all firm. There's no conditions. I mean, we got to the point where we were receiving offers with the good faith deposit. You know, so it's, we're serious. There's no buyer's remorse. Here's the good faith deposit. Here's our offer. And maybe it's just an email, a capture of the check, but it's a commodity now. It's a lot different from what it used to be. And a lot of agents are apparently leaving the industry as we speak in Ontario, which may not be such a bad thing. And I believe in BC as well, because things are a little more challenging now. Things are not selling automatically over the asking. Okay. And you do have to have some skills. You got to know how to sell a house. You got to know how to market things, which a lot, and I'm not bashing younger agents, but a lot of them have never come up against this before. It's a shock to them.
But the only time they probably experienced this is when their parents were buying their last family home, and they were probably too young to even understand what was happening. So I definitely see, you know, the younger realtors can definitely make it, but they have to look at, you know, how was it before, and so that they can match today's demand. And the demand is back high, you know, as far as service comes, the demand is high. It's no longer what they came into during 2021.
And it's funny, back in 2021, a lot of us were saying, this is not sustainable. I've been doing this podcast for a long time. And, you know, I talked to people, senior people in the industry. Everybody said the same thing. It's not sustainable. This can't happen. You know, you're listing a house for 1.2, it sells for 1.5. Somehow they get approval on the financing. That's another story. And it's just done. It's just done. Crazy stuff. I sold a house in Oakville once, and it was bidding war. There were six, I'm going off topic here, which I tend to do a lot. There were six offers. I still remember this. Six offers on the house, and one guy was way above everybody else. And anyways, they beat out everybody, and we sent everyone else away. We invited them in because this was still, it was not e-signature. This was back a few years now. Anyways, they came inside, and we were just signing acknowledgments and stuff, and I was talking to them, and these people were from a foreign country, and their agent spoke a foreign language. And we just started to, really nice people. They spoke really good English. And I said, so, and the guy, the buyer, turned to me and he says, you know what? And this was on a Monday. He says, you know, Randy, we just arrived in Canada on Saturday. I said, what? He says, we just arrived here on Saturday. We came to your open house on Sunday, and we bought this house on Monday. They had been in Canada for 2 days, and they overpaid like 200 grand over everybody else. And I was shocked. It's in my memory. It's like, you've been in Canada 2 days, and you just bought a house in Oakville? What? But it happens, and there's a lot of money in the world. But that was crazy stuff. And I talked about it later to other realtors, some of whom you probably know. And we just were shaking our heads like, what is it? What's going on here? But that has changed. That has changed. There's still foreign money, but I don't know if it's pouring in the way it did before. And let's not blame foreigners for the house prices we have. I think 95% of the house prices we have today were from free money, low mortgage rates, and it was Canadians bidding up the price, the vast majority of them. Today, it's a little more challenging. I do believe we're going to have rates coming down a little, but we're never going to go back to 2% mortgages again. That would be a disaster if they ever did that. Let's change topics a little bit here. I don't get involved too much with mortgage renewals, but I've had this conversation recently with a couple people asking, what should we do for the average person? Let's say they have a 2.5% mortgage. There's still quite a few of them out there. And it's coming up for renewal this year in September. And what would you counsel them when they come in and they're happy? You know, everything's good. They're not in default. Everything's fine. But they know their payments are going to jump. And if someone said to you today, what should we do? Should we go fixed? Should we go like a 5-year fixed or a 3-year fixed or a 1-year fixed? Or should we go variable? Because if the rates come down, maybe the variable will be on the winning side again. What would you advise them today? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
No, I get this question quite a bit. And, my answer is always the same. I like to take a risk-based approach based on the client's risk appetite, not mine. So in terms of what should they pick a fixed or a variable, you know, if you're a high risk tolerance client, who is willing to bank on, The rates coming down over the next 18 to 24 months. You could go with a 1 to 2 year fixed, or I would say the variable. The 1 and 2 year fixed and the variable, they're all within the same ballpark. The difference between the two is that for 1 to 2 years, you're going to pay that 6% and change. Where if you go with the variable, you're going to pay the same initial interest rate. But if we're right and the interest rates start coming down over the next 24 months, you will capture every single one of those discounts for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. Where if you are in a 1 to 2 year fixed, you're going to see these rates come down and you're going to wait for that's, you know, the end of your term for you to jump into that lower rate. So that would be the high to medium risk client tolerance. Somebody who is not adverse to risk whatsoever, they don't want to worry about what's going to happen in the market. Well, we saw the rates come down and everybody said that the rates will never go back up. And then they did. I don't want to worry about that. I'm going to lock in for a 5 year fixed. I'm not going to worry about it. I know my payment is going to be the same. I know what I will owe at the end of the 5 years. That is a low risk tolerant type of client. And those are the type of conversations and examples that I will give them. And then they decide what term to go into. Now, somebody who's coming in for a renewal, the banks are really good at sending early renewal notices. Lock in now. You can lock in early without any penalties. I would discourage from anybody to locking in early without doing some homework. There is some benefit. If your income is still good, nothing has changed, or it's gotten better since you initially received your that mortgage term, shop around, because you might be in a position where you could say, let's stretch out my amortization again. Mm-hmm. So that the payment is now going to reduce back to what I'm comfortable paying. And a lot of banks allow you to do additional monthly payments. You could do a lump sum up to 20% a year, where you can now start without any penalties. So you can put yourself in a position where your monthly liability will reduce, and you have that flexibility to still reduce the compound interest by making additional payments. The auto renewal option is not going to allow you to do that. So explore. Loyalty is always a good thing, but staying with the same bank sometimes, or the same lender that you're with at the moment, it's not necessarily the cheapest option today. So shop around, ask questions, and look into really what options you have out there to make your mortgage more affordable. That's exactly what I will do come next year when my mortgage is up for renewal. I will do the same thing. I'll shop around and see how I can make things life easier for me.
And you mentioned making extra payments, man. That's my generation. That's the way I was taught. You make those extra payments, which I believe go straight to principal. Yeah, there's no interest there. That's all to the principal. And the people need to get back to that. That's a very conservative way to do it, but it gets your mortgage paid off much faster.
Absolutely. The easiest way to do it is to set yourself up with a biweekly accelerator option. That gives you an additional 2 monthly mortgage payments, principal, 100% principal. And you're not even going to see the difference, because it's a small amount that really doesn't really change your life that much. And you'll just see that amortization really fast track. And you still will have room to meet that 20% threshold if you come into a windfall of an additional cash amount that you want to put towards your mortgage.
Sure.
Or put towards your next investment property.
There you go. All excellent ideas, Gio. So we've covered a little bit about the investment scene, what people should be considering if they're interested in making an investment, a little bit about people who are renewing their mortgages. What about first-time buyers? Let's talk a little bit about first-time buyers. I feel bad for first-time buyers, for the younger people today, because of the prices, especially in the Greater Toronto Area or in Vancouver, especially. where prices are really high. And unless you've got some help, maybe from the bank of mom and dad or something like that, it's pretty tough these days to qualify. Even if you're looking at condos here in Mississauga, you know, $550 for a one bedroom, just a basic condo, $650 maybe for a two bedroom. You got to have some pretty good income, even if there's two people, to qualify for that with a simple 10, God forbid, or 20% down. You need six figure income, which a lot of kids, a lot of younger 28 year old first time buyers may not have. What advice would you give? Because it's been so tough, and I feel bad for that younger generation, the generation, what are they, Generation Z? They're not even millennials anymore. The young ones, anyways, 28 year olds, they really don't want to rent forever. You know, they don't. And they want to buy something, but they just don't have enough income to qualify. There is still the stress test, 2% that they have to qualify over. And they maybe they can scrape together a basic down payment, but when they look, they just can't qualify. What would you recommend? I mean, and honestly, my heart goes out to first-time buyers right now because it's not easy. It really isn't. And what would you tell someone, a young couple, they're both working, but their combined income, let's say, is 100 grand, and they need 150 in order to qualify for a condo, okay? Not everybody makes 300 grand a year, but they're making combined 100,000 in order to buy this condo that or a type of condo they want, they need 150 income. Would you tell them just to wait to keep saving? What advice would you give a first-time buyer?
So let's take a multi-step approach to this one because they have options. The very first option is get rid of the idea that you're going to buy your first home and it's going to be your dream home. We're in the neighborhood that you want.
For sure.
It's going to be done up the way that you have seen on TV.
Lorne Park. Buy a house in Lorne Park for your first house, of course.
So that's the first idea that they need to deal with and come to an understanding that they're probably not going to love their first home. But if the goal is to get into home ownership, that is the first stepping stone. Lower your expectation, you know, be within your budget, go where that budget allows you to go. Jump in the market as you want. You can always upgrade as things progress, as income goes up, or as interest rates come down, as you could sell, you know, at a higher price so that you have a bigger down payment for the next home. The other thing that they could do is instead of thinking about their first home being their residence, maybe their first home is an investment property. Stay home. You know, stay home with your parents a little bit longer, buy a rental property so that additional gap of income can come from the forecasted income that we're going to use for you to buy that first investment property, right? Obviously, you know, you do still need to come up with that 20% down payment, but if you have mom and dad helping you out, it's a great way for you to jump into the real estate market. But your first step is you're going to be an investor. You're going to learn the ropes of real estate ownership and how to build from there. That would be an amazing first step for anybody. And, you know, failing those two and they really want their dream home and their dream neighborhood, well, you're going to need a co-signer. And, you know, I've seen many cases where mom and dad not only do the gifted down payment, but they also co-sign on the application so that we bump up the overall income. And that's really the only way to do it. The condo market is a little bit challenging because we've seen condo fees really go up. And that is, the condo fee is one of those expenses that are used by lenders to calculate affordability. 50% of that amount is considered for affordability if it is your primary residence. But if it's an investment property, 100% of that cost is used for affordability. And we're seeing condo fees anywhere from $700 to $1,500 a month. Big, big liability to use for qualifying for that first mortgage.
This has been a great talk, man. Excellent. And I got a feeling we could talk much more. We'll have to do this again soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, Giovanni Barca. So nice to have you on board, and I'm going to put your contact information underneath the YouTube video and also on the audio podcast. And if anyone's looking for an expert in mortgage financing, I urge them to give you a call. So thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was nice speaking to you. It really was.
Thank you for listening to another episode, the Randy Selzer Real Estate Podcast. Follow us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And check out our main website at randyselzer.com for much more valuable info on the Canadian real estate scene.